Uproot the System means that we are looking at the roots of the climate crisis. How did we even get here? Because it's not just an environmental problem. It's not just a problem about carbon dioxide emissions. At its core, it's a systemic problem that impacts people. It's a system that has caused not just the climate crisis, but also all the other socioeconomic crises like racism and ableism and sexism and class inequality. And all of these socioeconomic crises, they amplify the climate crisis and are amplified by the climate crisis.
We want to thank you,
Mitzi. The only way to solve the climate crisis is to uproot the system.
Mitzi Tan, thank you so much for being with us, spokesperson of Youth Advocates for Climate Action Philippines. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez in Glasgow and the U.S.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won,
you're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kbu.fm.
On October 4th, 2021, the KBOO Foundation, licensee of KBOO FM 90.7 Portland, Oregon, filed an application with the Federal Communications Commission for renewal of license. Members of the public wishing to view this application or obtain information about how to file comments and petitions on the application can visit publicfiles.fcc.gov and search in KBOO-FM's public file.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kbu.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kbu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Washington County becomes the first in the state to ban flavored tobacco products. Yesterday's election yielded mixed results for both parties, and the Supreme Court hears a gun rights case for the first time in a decade. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. I'm Althea Billings. Washington County voted to ban the sale of flavored tobacco products yesterday, becoming the first county in the state to do so. The ban applies to menthol cigarettes and vape products. The ordinance passed 3-2 with pushback from the business community. Purchasing and selling flavored tobacco products is now a Class A civil infraction, which would be a $2,000 fine for an individual and a $4,000 fine for a corporation. The county board also banned sale to anyone under 21 and banned coupons and promotions for tobacco products. The ordinance was created based on research on the health risks posed to young people using tobacco and vape products. The ban goes into effect next month, but it won't be enforced until January 1st. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley announces he will not support an ambassadorship for former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Emanuel is a controversial figure because of his history of police brutality in the city while he was in office, among other perceived policy failures. Even so, the Biden administration has nominated him to be the ambassador to Japan. Merkley's no vote may indeed sink his nomination. Merkley wrote in a statement, quote, "Black lives matter. Here in the halls of Congress, it is important that we not just speak and believe these words, but put them into actions in the decisions we make. I have carefully considered Mayor Emanuel's record and the input of civil rights leaders, criminal justice experts, and local elected officials who have reached out to the Senate to weigh in, and I have reached the decision that I cannot support his nomination to serve as U.S. ambassador," end quote. Earlier this year, KBOO's Janka Soderberg spoke with Christy Sanford of the People's Lobby, one of the groups opposing Emanuel's ambassadorship nomination.
Speaking from the perspective of a Chicagoan, You know, our experience with Rahm Emanuel is that he does not have the temperament or the right ethical approach to public life to hold this position and represent the United States in the way that we need to be represented in this time. And I'll give you a few examples. So in Chicago, Rahm Emanuel governed with very much of an iron fist and did not consult with or communicate with or really work with communities about the impacts that his policy programs would have in our communities. So one quick example is early on in his tenure, he closed 50 public schools in predominantly Black communities, also in Latinx communities. And this was just very traumatic for students and parents, as schools are the anchors of our communities. That was done with very little consultation. And, you know, the other really important thing is to remember is that Rahm Emanuel helped cover up the murder of a Black teenager named Laquan McDonald by a member of the Chicago Police Department. So that in and of itself ought to disqualify him from any kind of position that requires truthfulness, collaboration, and frankly, like, and then any attachment to any kind of ethical behavior.
I understand that he also has a reputation, a nickname of a Rambo Emanuel, that he is quite militaristic in his approach. And in an area of ambassadorship, but diplomacy is pretty important.
Yeah, I will agree with that. I would say, you know, Donald Trump whipped up a tremendous amount of anti-Asian racism and used that racism to consolidate his political base. And we've seen the devastating consequences for people of Asian descent over the last few years. And no example more stark in Atlanta with the women, with the murder of 6 Asian women and 2 other folks. And it just, in this time, what we need from the Biden administration is actually to tone down any kind of anti-China rhetoric. We need to understand that the Chinese people and the Chinese government are not our enemy. And in fact, we need to be working across the globe with other countries in order to make us all safe from this virus and to address climate change. And so we need somebody in that position that is going to be respectful, diplomatic, and be the best representation that we can have for the United States in this moment. And again, that is not Rahm Emanuel, to your point. Government is actually the place where we solve our collective problems and make our society more equitable. And when you share those values, it's actually pretty easy to agree on a thing like Rahm Emanuel should not have a cabinet position or be an ambassador to countries that are significant allies of ours.
Well, thank you so much. Again, we've been speaking with Christy Sanford. She is one of the coalition members of People's Action, Roots Action, that's opposing Rahm Emanuel for consideration as a potential ambassador to Japan or China in the Biden administration. Thank you, Christy, for joining us today on KBOO.
Thank you.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Yesterday's elections provided victories for both Democrats and Republicans across the country. In Boston, 36-year-old Michelle Wu became the first woman and the first person of color to be elected mayor. Wu is a former student of Elizabeth Warren and has released plans for a Boston Green New Deal, achieving a net zero municipal footprint by 2024 and 100% renewable electricity in the city by 2030. In Virginia, Republican Glenn Youngkin defeated former Democratic National Committee Chair Terry McAuliffe for governor. Youngkin has said that he would support reinstating some abortion restrictions in Virginia, that he opposes teaching critical race theory, and that he opposes school mask and COVID vaccine mandates. Though final results are not yet in, Republicans have flipped several seats in Virginia's House of Delegates and could retake control. In Minneapolis, voters rejected a measure to replace the police department with a Department of Public Safety, while the mayor, Jacob Frey, is in the lead after the first round of the city's ranked choice vote. And in Buffalo, Democratic Socialist candidate India Walton lost to four-term incumbent Byron Brown. Although Walton won the Democratic primary, the local Democratic Party refused to support her, and Brown staged a successful writing campaign. A new person was appointed to the Oregon State Environmental Quality Commission, and the timber industry isn't happy. Governor Kate Brown nominated Amy Schlusser, a staff attorney with the Green Energy Institute, to the Oregon Environmental Quality Commission. Schlusser is replacing Wade Mosby, a retired forest products executive. Brown spokesperson Charles Boyle said, quote, "Amy Schlusser brings experience in energy and climate policy, regulatory processes, and community engagement to the commission. The Oregon Manufacturers and Commerce Association does not approve." The group's Preston Mann said, quote, "There is no question she would frequently be in the position of being asked to make decisions as a commissioner that are directly related to the advocacy work she currently engages in." Aware of these objections, Boyle said, quote, "Having deep experience in climate policy and a history of effective public service is not a conflict of interest. Members of the Environmental Quality Commission are appointed by the governor with no other approval needed." A gun rights lawsuit is in front of the Supreme Court for the first time in over a decade. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the New York law at stake.
For the first time in more than a decade, the United States Supreme Court heard arguments in a major Second Amendment case. New York has a proper cause law, which requires those applying for an unrestricted concealed carry permit to demonstrate special need beyond a simple desire for self-defense. Two New York residents were recently denied permits, and with the help of a National Rifle Association affiliate, they sued the licensing officials. After they lost in lower court, they appealed to the United States Supreme Court. Their representative, Paul Clement, argued the New York law violates their constitutional Second Amendment rights. Clement said such a right means they don't have to satisfy a government official that they have a really good need to exercise it. The Department of Justice, on behalf of the Biden administration, argued in support of New York, asking the justices to defer to the long-standing history of allowing legislators to place reasonable limits on firearms in the name of public safety. Justice Department Attorney Brian Fletcher said there is no quarrel with the idea the Second Amendment has something to say outside the home, but also that there's a substantial history and tradition of regulation in the public carrying of concealable weapons. The potential opinions of the justices seem mixed based on questions raised and statements made. Justice Stephen Breyer suggested people even of good moral character can drink at events and get angry with each other. He said if they have a concealed weapon, quote, "a lot," end quote, of people end up dead. Justice Samuel Alito, one of the court's more conservative justices, said people with illegal guns are walking around the city, while hard-working, law-abiding citizens can't be armed. Justice Brett Kavanaugh asked why it isn't good enough to just say you live in a violent area and want to be able to defend yourself. Justices also asked if guns could be barred from subways, college campuses, and even Yankee Stadium. Clement suggested questions like that should be resolved in future cases. A decision in this case, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, is expected this summer. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention signs off on vaccines for 5 to 11-year-olds. Depending on the speed of vaccine rollout, many kids could be fully vaccinated by Christmas. Data from a Pfizer study showed 90% effectiveness at protecting against the virus in younger kids with the lower dose shots. Doctors also recommend the vaccine for kids who've already had a COVID infection. 28 million kids will be newly eligible for a coronavirus vaccine now that it has been approved by the FDA and the CDC for emergency use. Holiday travel is around the corner, even as many areas of the country are still experiencing significant COVID case numbers. Eric Tegedoff has more with tips on traveling safely.
As vaccination rates go up, people are more likely to be traveling this holiday season than they did last year. A physician in Seattle has some tips for how families can travel safely. Dr. Avantika Waring with Kaiser Permanente says the CDC still recommends people delay travel until they are fully vaccinated, meaning 2 weeks after their final shot. Beyond that, she says folks should continue to protect themselves the way they have been.
All of the things that we've been doing throughout the pandemic, even beyond vaccination, are still really important. So wearing a mask on the airline and also in any sort of indoor space, trying to practice social distancing from people who aren't in our immediate family is still important. Washing our hands, avoiding large crowds.
Washington State recommends booster shots at least 6 months after their original Pfizer or Moderna shots for people 65 and older, also those with underlying medical conditions or who live in long-term care facilities. Waring says people should also speak with their doctors about getting a flu shot. This week, the CDC's vaccine advisors voted to approve the Pfizer vaccine for kids ages 5 to 11, giving the green light for children in this age group to get shots. Waring says this opens the door for them to travel safely over the holidays.
Having conversations with your kids, I think right now is a great opportunity as we're heading into the next phase of vaccination. Just talk to them about the importance of getting these shots and how it's hopefully going to change things for all of us in the coming weeks and months.
Parents can consult their kids' doctors about getting the COVID-19 vaccination. Waring also advises people to keep in mind the COVID-19 regulations of the places they'll travel.
The state and local guidelines might be different based on where you're going. So always look into what the requirements will be when you arrive as far as masking requirements and also whether you'll need to have vaccination documents and that kind of thing.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact, tracing the rise and fall of the CIA torture program following 9/11. At 6, it's Rhythm Nation with Peter Marks, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will have a chance of rain and a low of 55 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 57. Today in history, in 1793, French feminist and abolitionist Olympe de Gouges was killed by guillotine during the French Reign of Terror. De Gouges was a political activist known for writing the Declaration of the Rights of Woman and the Female Citizen and for her advocacy for ending the slave trade in the French colonies. The quote of the day is from Madame de Gouges, who wrote, quote, "Woman is born free and lives equal to man in her rights. Social distinctions can only be based on the common utility." Facebook announced yesterday that it plans to stop using its facial recognition system. The social networking giant introduced facial recognition software in late 2010 to help users identify and tag their friends in photos. In doing so, it has amassed one of the world's largest digital photo archives. Facebook says over 1 billion of those photos will be deleted, although the company will keep DeepFace, the algorithm that powers the facial recognition system. Jerome Presenti, the company's vice president of artificial intelligence, wrote in a blog that, quote, "The many specific instances where facial recognition can be helpful need to be weighed against growing concerns about the use of this technology as a whole." Adam Schwartz, a senior staff attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, acknowledged the importance of the decision. Schwartz said, quote, "Facebook getting out of the face recognition business is a pivotal moment in the growing national discomfort with this technology. Corporate use of face surveillance is very dangerous to people's privacy," end quote. A bill was introduced in the Ohio State Legislature that echoes the Texas abortion ban that passed earlier this year. It would ban abortions in the state and allow private citizens to sue medical professionals who perform them. Mary Sherman has more.
Ohio's again jumping into the national debate over abortion access with a new bill introduced that mirrors Texas's strict abortion ban. House Bill 480 would ban all abortions in Ohio and allow any person to file a lawsuit against a medical provider who performs the procedure or who, quote, aids or abets, unquote, an abortion. Its backers are calling it the 2363 Act, claiming the number represents the number of abortions performed each day in the U.S. Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio, Kelly Copeland, says the so-called vigilante provision is copied directly from the Texas bill.
This is such a sick game of ping pong that Ohio and Texas are playing right now. The first six-week ban was introduced here, and then Texas took it and added the vigilante piece, and now Ohio's picking it back up and adding a total ban to it.
It's incredibly dangerous.
Under HB 480, anyone who performs an abortion could face a fine of up to $10,000. Last week, a second hearing was heard in the Ohio Senate on an abortion trigger bill, which would ban abortions if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade. And Mason became the second Ohio city to prohibit abortion within city limits. Resident Nikki Foster believes it puts politics before a person's medical well-being and suspects it's also based on the Texas ban.
We just don't believe, and we know that this doesn't reflect our values. If the Texans can come by and plop this on city council's desk, this can happen everywhere else too.
The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments this week regarding a challenge to the Texas law. And Copeland says it's difficult to know if local or state attempts to ban abortion will stick.
With anti-abortion politicians falling all over themselves to one-up each other and the state of the U.S. Supreme Court, we really don't know. But they're trying to strip everyone of their ability to access abortion care, regardless of the reason or where they live.
Supporters argue that human life starts at the moment of fertilization and deserves protection. Opponents counter that it's an attack on women's rights and reproductive health. Support for this reporting was provided by Media in the Public Interest and funded in part by the George Gunn Foundation. I'm Mary Sherman reporting.
Indigenous groups are making their voices heard at the International Climate Summit in Glasgow, and new voting legislation includes protections for Native voting rights. With more on those stories, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A delegation from a Native organization in the U.S. is taking part in events at the U.N. Climate Summit in Scotland. Jade Begay, director of Indian Collective's Climate Justice Campaign and a member of the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, spoke Tuesday. She was part of a roundtable on President Biden's Justice 40 initiative to advance environmental justice and spur economic opportunity for disadvantaged communities. President Biden's Justice 40 promise is to deliver at least 40% of the overall benefits from federal investments in climate and clean energy to disadvantaged communities.
We're hoping that through Justice 40, the federal government really learns how to equitably channel resources directly to our frontline and Indigenous communities. And we can help. There's a prime example over the last year with the CARES funding that kicked in for Indigenous communities during the pandemic. So, there's a bottleneck that can happen in the process where it takes a while for this federal funding to get invested into our communities and then to make its way directly to people. And so while that process is happening, NDN, organizations like mine, we've stepped in to really channel urgent and quick resources to our people.
The Indian Collective delegation will participate in a number of events at the Climate Summit throughout the week. National Native organizations are applauding bipartisan support for Native voting rights legislation. The Native American Rights Fund and the National Congress of American Indians praised Tuesday's announcement by Republican and Democratic senators, adding their support for the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. The legislation includes provisions for Native voting rights. More than a dozen Native organizations across the country have endorsed it. They're calling on Congress and the federal government to pass protections so Native voters have equal access to voting resources. U.S. Senators Brian Schatz and Lisa Murkowski, leaders of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, have introduced a resolution recognizing November as National Native American Heritage Month. The month celebrates Native American, Native Hawaiian, and Alaska Native people, their cultures, achievements, and contributions. More than 20 senators co-sponsored the resolution. Efforts are underway in Iowa by local community members urging schools to retire their Indian mascots. The federally recognized tribe in the state is also calling on more than 60 schools to drop their mascots. Mike Moen has more.
In Mason City, the school board is discussing whether the high school's Mohawk nickname should be discontinued. Leanne Clausen DeMontes, a mother of Indigenous children in the district, says while some say it's part of school tradition, it's not a reason to keep using it.
You think about the tradition of tens of thousands of years of indigenous peoples in North America or elsewhere. And then, you know, 95 or 100 years really just pales in comparison.
Coinciding with the local effort is a letter from the Meskwaki Nation, which calls upon 66 schools in Iowa to retire Native-themed mascots.
For a lot of folks, it's just simply not having good information or not knowing how to ask the questions about the use of Native American names.
But she feels there's less hostility toward the movement to retire these names, citing the racial reckoning from the past year. And at the pro level, franchises such as the Major League Baseball team in Cleveland are making changes. In Iowa, the Marion School District recently retired its Indians nickname.
That was Mike Moen, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A legal services program in Montana has been selected as one of the most innovative justice programs in the country. Eric Tegedoff has the story.
The Rural Justice Collaborative Advisory Council chose the Rural Incubator Project for Lawyers, part of the Montana Legal Services Association, as part of its inaugural class of innovation sites. Megan Scott, who helmed the project for 2 years in Montana, explains the program's objective.
Montana Legal Services established the Rural Incubator Project for Lawyers to help address the justice gap that prevents low and moderate income Montanans from achieving justice, particularly in the underserved and rural communities.
The program began in 2018. Many rural communities lack affordable legal aid or the resources to receive it. Scott says fellows in the two-year program have the capacity to help this population. A lack of reliable internet is among the common obstacles for rural residents. Tara Kunkel is executive director of Rulo Strategies, which has partnered with the National Center for State Courts to oversee the Rural Justice Collaborative Initiative. She says access to justice is an important aspect of the Rural Incubator Project for Lawyers, and one of the reasons why it was selected. Kunkel says projects were chosen that offer replicable solutions.
The big focus of the Rural Justice Collaborative is being able for rural communities to learn from other rural communities and solve problems that are unique to rural justice systems.
The Rural Incubator Project for Lawyers was one of 9 rural innovation sites chosen from around the country. Others include the Rural Attorney Recruitment Program in nearby South Dakota. Kunkel says there will be future rounds to select more programs. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
With COP26, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael feels the futility of words.
Passionate poet that I am, I know words won't save us or the planet. Biden spun some fine words and insufficient promises at COP26 yesterday, 2 days after he encouraged oil companies to step up production to bring down the prices. It's pay now or pay later, with the costs and damages inflating like the dollar never has. What if COP26 had been done on Zoom and the money saved spent on trees? Costa Rica, Panama, Colombia, and Ecuador announced a joint 200,000-square-mile marine reserve, but will calling it that keep out mega fishing ships from other nations? And that phrase, alternative energy, when the problem is too much energy being used, period, with more of the earth being dug up to provide the lithium and other elements needed for those alternatives while windmill blades wear out and can't be recycled. And the one word no one dare say is overpopulation, because there's no clean technological solution to that problem and no known way the earth can survive this many of us. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Now that Halloween has passed, groups recommend recycling your leftover jack-o'-lanterns rather than sending them to the landfill. Lily Bulkey has more.
Pumpkins are 90% water, and the National Wildlife Federation's David Mizajewski says once the seeds are removed, they break down quickly and can make a good addition to your compost pile. If you don't have a compost pile, he says some local recycling centers, nearby farms, or community gardens may collect old pumpkins for composting.
If your pumpkins are not like really, really squishy and rotten, you can also crack them open and leave a couple of them out in your yard, and they'll be a nice little treat for the birds and the squirrels and some of the other wildlife.
He says generally the NWF recommends against feeding wildlife, especially mammals, but it's okay to give the local wildlife a once-a-year treat of a pumpkin or two, as long as it hasn't been painted or sprayed with anything to keep out pests. But he adds it's important not to go overboard and to avoid leaving pumpkins out if you live in an area with a rat problem. Mizajewski says pumpkin seeds also have a variety of uses. He says you can use them to grow your own pumpkin plants for the spring.
Now, not only is that going to result in you having your own little private pumpkin patch, but the flowers that pumpkins put out, pumpkins are part of the squash family, and they actually can be an important source of nectar and pollen for some of our wild native bees.
He recommends toasting the seeds as a treat for yourself or scattering them raw outdoors or in bird feeders for backyard birds. He adds there's more information on how to create wildlife-friendly landscapes in your yard online at nwf.org/garden. This is Lily Bolke with Commonwealth News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Dan Raphael, and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Eric Tegedoff, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact, tracing the rise and fall of CIA torture programs following 9/11.
Making contact.
I'm Monica Lopez, this week on Making Contact.
And so if you think about the 9/11 case as the one and only way in which all the 2,976 people who were direct casualties of the 9/11 attacks, if this case